Hi, Kelvin.
Hi, Ole.
Kelvin, we are doing this wonderful series of conversations in which you talk about what you are discovering in tetrionics. And in a previous episode, we were talking about how people can play with the triangles and how we can understand that in terms of the forces of physics. And I asked you if you were willing to think out loud in an area where you haven't looked very much as yet, which is that of health and healing and cellular regeneration. And I'm asking you if you were willing to think along on this, on the one hand, so that people can see what the understanding of tetrionics can do outside of where you have as yet explored it, but on the other hand, see how tetrionics can apply to what we all live in, which is our body and our health and our well-being on Earth. I would like to sort of give a starting point for this by a quite strange entryway into this conversation, which is basically from my own experience with health and healing. I went to medical school and I learned a lot about what doctors know about the body, but I also realized that doctors do not understand the electromagnetic nature of nature. And in our previous conversation, you've explained a lot about how tetrionics, electricity, physics is all basically the same. It's a very clever means to understand how it all connects. And I'd like to present an idea which for me seems to be implied and evident, which is that what you have described for the way triangles can create tetrahedra, which then can create the atoms that we know in nature. Likewise, I've been looking at what happens in our body when our body is formed, and the starting point of that is the first cell, and the first cell then divides by a fractal. In the creation of the fractal, all of the principles which you have described for tetrionics apply. There is a logic by which forces create boundaries, they create polarities, and out of that our body is formed. Just to give a very simple example, when the first cell of our body divides, it goes from the physical to the molecular. Under the microscope, it can be seen that the molecules actually start to flow apart. It is clear that the atoms then start to evaporate, the atom bonds start to loosen up, after which there is a kind of mirroring effect from an unseen boundary, after which it can be seen that the cell comes back as a copy of itself or a mirror image, but not a complete full mirror image. There's a slight difference between the one cell and the other, and we can see that later because the cell has developed into heart cells and liver cells and fat cells and skin cells and so on. But the principle is still the same. There is this dynamic of cell division, which works by this mirroring, which in the previous conversation was described as turning over the triangle, so that you can see that the one side and the other side are actually two parts of the same picture. But at the same time, we see that interplay which you have developed in the formulation of the atoms by the model of tetrionics, in which you see how in a very logical and simple manner everything hangs together, and that's also what we find in the body. A while ago I described a text which was called The Equation of Health, which has the core idea, which is quite simple, as follows. When the first cell divides by this fractal, it forms the hologram of our body, and that hologram of our body is always in interaction with the environment. Evidently, we bump into the environment, and now and then we crash into the environment, But as a result, the boundary between us and the universe sort of bounces back and can bounce back into the body or away from it. When it bounces away from the body, we lose body parts or we lose ideas or we lose consciousness, something within us goes outside of us. But the other way around, when something bumps into us, the boundary between us and the environment sort of gets internalized in the body, as a result of which one part of the body starts to do something else than the rest of the body. Homeopathy is very clever at detecting that, and homeopathy actually then uses water or something else to give the information of how the boundary of the body is no longer in place. So the healthy part of the body gets to know what the disconnected part of the body is doing. The two parts can reconnect and the disease can be resolved. So for me, that led to a very simple conclusion, which is the essence of the equation of health, that we are always in balance with our environment until the moment that the boundary between us and the universe shifts. I can bring that back to the very basic element of the one cell, because when you look at the one cell dividing, it doesn't much matter if you look at one cell or two cells, because the two cells work as one unity. Even though there are two units, there's still one unity. And so instead of looking at the many cells, we can just look at the fractal by which all of these cells are connected by their cell divisions. Which means that everything in the body we can reduce to that principle of the first cell, which is essentially a cell with a boundary around it. And the boundary is the connection to the universe, but also the place where the universe turns outside in, informing the cell. So the cell is the universe in inverse. Mm-hmm. So everything we do in our body, in our life, where we use freedom of choice, is in that interface, in that boundary.
Right.
And when you look at it from a mathematical perspective, you can actually see that this double lipid membrane of the cell has a double layer of fat cells, fat molecules, and it is like the equation sign of mathematics. So that is where we always make sure that we can stay in contact with the universe as a whole, which is also the definition of health, being that the universe as a whole continues within our body without errors, without computational errors. So when I look at tetrionics and I see how the triangles, which are in my mind I can replace by cells, they form tetrahedra, which in a way I can replace by organs, then I can also understand how our body is like a like an atom in the tetrionic staging of events. But it also means that all of the transitions between the triangle, the tetrahedron, and the atoms are stages which are used by the living cells. The cells operate by that logic. The cells operate by that principle. The cells are manifestations of it. So that everything that is described in tetrionics is simply applied by the living cells. And there are a lot of people who have been looking at exactly what you describe in tetrionics, but now in the body they can see also that it is the interaction between electricity and magnetism forming radio fields, storing information, which is the essence of how our body works. But also that means that when there are diseases, there is something illogical about the way those cell communications take place. And in fact, it was the work of Bert Verveen, a Dutch physiologist, who made that very clear. And he said that health is based on the balance of the feed forward and the feedback loops between the cells. And if those feedback loops become too long or too short, then the connections are lost. Disease sets in.
Right.
In our body, we can see that this feed forward and feedback between the cells is part of the story. And going back to the first cell dividing, you can see that the first cell has a cell cycle, but when it divides, the first cell ends up as two cells, each of which has a cell cycle, and both of them need to be balanced in their directions and orientations. But between the cells, there is also a cycle formed by the feed forward and the feedback loop. So there are four circuits in that sense after the cell has divided. And people like Björn Nordenström, Robert Becker, and many others have shown that these operate by the principle of electromagnetism. Many doctors do not know about that. But researchers like Tom Bearden and others have looked at the work of Priore and other doctors, physiologists, researchers, who showed that once you understand the electromagnetic nature of the body, you can actually correct and rectify the cell communication. Some people actually got prosecuted because of that understanding. Royal Raymond Rife is one of them. He realized that cancer is associated with the disturbance at the base of the cell, and what he identified with a hyper-powerful microscope that he built as a virus at the core of it. But he also realized that if he took the frequency of vibration of that virus, and under the microscope he could see it, he could find out how long it was. And so essentially he did the same trick as is said of Caruso singing to the wine glass to let it shatter. But likewise, Royal Raymond Rife used the radio frequency attuned to that virus to basically sing the virus apart. And for what I found, there has been a series of trials with people who had cancer, 146 of them, if I'm correct, and all of them were cancer-free after this approach. There are many people who have been looking into this, and there are many examples of understanding how frequencies can be turned around to cancel disturbances in the body. A example of this is used in car technology, where some of the more luxury cars actually have a loudspeaker next to the engine, connected to a little amplifier, connected to a loudspeaker, so that the microphone records the vibrations of the car, and then the loudspeakers play back that sound, but in an inverse manner. So that they can use the principle of wave cancellation.
Yeah.
And in mathematics, there is a principle which is connected to that, which is called phase conjugate. If the feed forward and the feedback actually match up totally, you wouldn't even notice that there is something happening there. It's like the fountain which keeps on flowing. You cannot see that it is by a flow of water until you turn off the tap. So there is something in this principle in healthcare where you can actually see that if there are diseases in the body, all you need to do is invert the problem of the disease to cancel it. And I have had some very simple examples of this. At the time that I worked with massage and hypnosis and meditation techniques, and I discovered that in touching the body of people, it is possible to feel where their body is overactive, but also, and that can be more difficult to feel, that there are areas where the body is underactive. And then the traditional Japanese and Chinese and Indian technique is that I can then use my left hand to connect to the area where there's too much movement, too much activity, and with my right hand I connect that into the area where there's too little activity. It's called the principle of the receiving hand and the giving hand. All I have to do is while I connect, while I basically do the short circuit between the two, I must be very careful that I stay out of the picture, that I just let it flow through me and I don't get involved. Because yes, I can feel what's happening in the other, but I must be aware that it is not of my business. It's not what's happening within me. I'm just seeing the message come by as it is balanced out in the body of the other. Likewise, I was able to find out with hypnosis experiences that in the same manner, people can have ideas which are locked in at a different level of consciousness, which are very often associated to shock events which they had in their life, something, a time where something really went wrong in their experience, and they in a way disconnected from that experience, but at the same time stored that experience somewhere in their body. As a result of which, that memory is still stored within them, but it is sealed away from everything else, so it's like in its own little enclave, and at the same time, as a result of being locked away, it interferes with the functioning of the rest of the body. I discovered that it is very simple to retrieve that memory, in a way turn it inside out, sort of look into it, explain to them that they did survive that event, that there is no need to store the memory in that manner, then they can release the memory. Actually, the energy of it is liberated straight away, and even though they still have the memory, they no longer have the charge around it. So there is a very simple technique by which you can then see that the problem which was stored in the body is brought from one side of the boundary to the other, as a result of which it is resolved. And that brings me to the general principle which I found, which is that in general there is a difference between live or live and evil, which is that there is a boundary in between by which it mirrors, and that it gets sort of locked in on one side of the boundary where it shouldn't really be. This phase inverted, or it's the complex conjugate version. But once you see that, you can simply find out where the boundary is, and that experience or that memory, which is at the wrong side of the boundary, you bring it back to the proper side of the boundary. An example which I sometimes give for that is in the family farm, where the goat has gone from the pasture into the flower bed and is eating all the flower beds and gets sick of that and starts to make noise and jump around, and the only thing you need to do is lead the goat back from the flower bed to the pasture. And in that same sense, when there's something called evil, all you have to do is bring it out of the context where you find it, where it basically got lost and frantically tries to get away to go back to its own proper environment, lead it back, and that what is evil or was called evil turns out to be good. So there is something very fundamental which has to do with a very simple technique of bringing something which is outside of its own context, lost in a foreign domain, trying to frantically get back to its own context, to help it get back to its context. And this is essentially what we were talking about yesterday, with the notion of flipping the triangle so that the positively oriented charge and the negatively oriented charge, the right turn or the left turn, which are always combined, can be seen to flip over. And that the only reason for the flip is that we changed our involvement, which in my other work is the essence of how we use freedom of choice. This is where I brought together a couple of ideas which I've been working with over years. The principal idea is that health is where the universe continues within the body. The second idea is that disease is when that integrity is lost, because in the boundary between the part and the whole, something backfired. The third notion is that when there is a situation of such backfiring, something from one side of the boundary has gotten to the other and wreaks havoc. And the fourth point is that once you understand that, the only thing you have to do is open the gate and close the gate again, or in a way turn the gate inside out, so that what was on the one side can go back on the other side again. And I'm quite aware that you've not looked into medicine and healthcare at that level as yet in what you have described on your websites. You've already spoken of the way you looked into biology and into the electrical energies in cellular organisms, and that you very specifically already have a clear view on the way energy can be associated to atoms. And in a special session, you already talked about the relation between active radio and radioactive, and how that all has to do with adding energy to atoms to the level where it can deal with, and after that it just overflows. So I'm quite aware that I'm asking something which is not at the level where you've been looking at it as yet, but I would like to ask you this question nevertheless for two reasons. On the one hand, I seem to see this very direct relationship between what I have already looked at in cells versus what you have described in the equilateral triangles and how they relate. The second idea which I have with asking you this question is that people can listen in and experience how you can follow the logic of tetrionics and see what unfolds in an area where you haven't looked as yet. And it might well be that this means that you might come to some views or explorations which you can only assume from the logic of tetrionics. But then it is my view that at that point I will probably have experiences from my medical studies and my work in healing with people to show which way that would go. Would that work for you?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, there's certain generalizations you can make from the geometry of tetrionics. And obviously what I know so far as the five basic books I've written already and where my ideas are taking me with regard to biology and discussions that we've had there, so we can certainly extrapolate forward. Whether it proves to be right or correct, heaven only knows until we develop the ideas in more depth and give it a lot more thought. But the beauty of the geometry of tetrionics is that the underlying geometries, I hate to use this word, but it's infinitely scalable. What applies, what develops in the EM fields in the way of equilateral geometries is just as valid for gravity. You can use the same geometries to give you generalizations about what's taking place, and then from that start to flesh out a more specific model of the exact interactions. So, yeah.
So everything we know must be based on the fundamental principles of, say, the Planck constant or the Planck principles.
Yeah.
And maybe it would be nice to look at the starting point, at the connection of what we discussed last time about the turning over of the triangle, and what I noticed in healthcare, that the healing basically requires the turning over of a boundary. Something crossed the boundary, as a result of which it got included in an area where it should not be. And the solution is simply to turn it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from a tetrionic perspective,
for that.
Yeah, I was just about to say, from a tetrionic perspective, I would probably suggest that most of the things we take to be disease and things like that are just states of imbalance. It's either an excess or a deficiency of certain conditions, be they charge or energy at the quantum level, bringing about an imbalance in a system that of course reacts to that imbalance, either in a positive way or in a negative way. Obviously in tetrionics, I'll send you a slide here about it, everything's based around equalization. There's three basic laws in tetrionics. The first one is obviously that geometry is king, that equilateral, that the squared numbers of physics is based around equilateral geometries, and those geometries are scalable. So it doesn't matter from a geometric perspective whether we're talking about an EM field or whether we're talking about a gravity field or the mass of a planet. We can represent both with an equilateral field, and in fact the overlapping of two equilateral fields is exactly what Newton did mathematically when he wrote the formula for gravitation, and exactly what Coulomb did when he wrote a similar, almost identical formula for charge interaction. It's just in a general sense, Newton referred to the mass matter of an object, which I represent as a triangle, whereas Coulomb referred to the charge of an object, which again I represent as a triangle. But in both cases, those triangles have X number of quanta, positive and negative, within them, and those quanta are constantly trying to reach a state of equilibrium where the amount of positive and the amount of negative equalize each other out. That would be called a neutral energy state, or a ground state, if you like, where whatever system you're describing with the geometry is happiest. It's at a state of equilibrium. And the second law of tetrionics is that energy in all its forms, be it mass or matter or charge or gravity or force fields, anything like that, can all be represented through these equilateral geometries. And we can use that geometry, as I said, to generalize a specific system. It doesn't matter whether it's a quantum system or whether it's a cosmological scale system or in between, i.e. a body, human body, or an atom. It makes no difference. You can still use that geometry to state very general things, very general physical properties about a system and its motion, how it interacts with the external fields, the environment around it, and how in turn it reflects the imbalances in that system. Of course, the third law of tetrionics is that there are no infinities. Nothing goes on forever, even though we can scale these geometries from the quantum to the cosmological scale. They are finite geometries, so that in any system that we describe, for example, you may use the term environment. In tetrionics, we would say it's a spatial coordinate system. We simply say, based on the speed of light, c squared defines a circular area within which we can measure mass energy. C to the fourth is a spherical region of similar proportions, but that allows us to measure mass energy matter, particularly the topology versus just a planar field. But you would term that an environment. Everything that happens within that C to the fourth or quadrature field, spatial field, is the environment that's under study or measurement within that physical system. Now, within that system, the volume enclosed by C to the fourth has a set amount of energy, and that energy and or mass or matter in any of those forms, even charge, is arranged within that system in various ways to give us mass, matter, fields of force, chem fields, BEM or BEM fields, even gravitational fields. They're all forms of energy, and they can all be rearranged in various ways through their charge geometries, and they can be represented as triangles interacting in that system or that region, trying to reach a state of equilibrium. And that's what drives the universe from the quantum scale to the cosmological scale. It makes no real difference. Everything that drives motion and fields of force and changes in the environment that we perceive as physics is in fact energy just trying to reach this state of equilibrium, a ground state where it everything is balanced. And when it reaches that, it stops motion. Now, obviously, the universe being a large place and being filled with energy in various forms doesn't reach that state of equilibrium. It's what I call a eternal state of dynamic equilibrium. That is that the gravitational matter is balanced by the radiation or the radiative mass energies. In stars, matter's collapsed to release energy, and that released energy forms vacuum energies in space, which then interact with matter to create gravity, which in turn collapses the matter to create the stars, and the cycle goes on and on. It's a constant state where the system itself, in its various forms, is always changing and always seeking this equilibrium. At the scale of a human body, obviously, as I said, we can use a triangle or a series of triangles to represent the atom itself, to represent the fields of interaction, be they charge interaction or be they gravitational interaction, which is why Coulomb and Newton's laws look so similar. They are, in fact, geometric, well, the mathematical representations of a specific geometry. I'll get a illustration, I'll send that through to you as well. The geometry that best describes both of them is what I call a superpositioned pair of fields, be they chem fields or be they gravitational fields, makes no difference. Where we generalize the mass or energy content of a pair of cells in the human body, we can say that that mass energy within that environment or that spatial field overlaps and interacts. The best illustration that sort of sums it up is 6908 in tetrionics. I'll shoot you through a illustration of that, but others can look it up. It basically shows matter, which we may interpret as a cell or an atom in a body or a compound or a molecule or even the human body itself, two bodies interacting. Whatever it is, whatever the form of matter is, we can draw that as a tetrahedra, as you say. We can then show the energy field, the BEM field, biological EM energies, that that body of matter has as a triangle in a general term. And if it comes close to another body, you then have two bodies with their BEM fields interacting, one on top of each other. Those interactions, superposition as it's termed in mathematically, but they just create fields of force, invisible, almost intangible, but real physical forces all the same. We may not be able to perceive them or measure them, but they exist. They're radiated from the body. The body itself will generate heat. It will generate an electromagnetic field. We generalize all this, as you see in that illustration, with two triangles. And we then draw a circle or a sphere around those two bodies, be they atoms or be they human bodies, makes no difference, or two planets, makes no difference. And we just adjust how many quanta are in those two fields to reflect the differing mass matter. If one body is twice the mass of the other one, you would have twice as many triangles and that would affect the pattern that's created where those fields overlap. Accordingly, if there was another body outside or if there was temperature, you would have another field. And all these fields are doing one thing. They're all in motion and they're all interacting. They're either attracting or repelling based on their charges and the direction of their quanta. And they're doing that in order to seek a neutral or a ground state of equilibrium. They never reach it because it's all dynamic and it's constantly evolving. So what we see as two cells interacting is, in fact, we can represent it as two tetrahedra with equilateral fields overlapping, and they interact via these fields, and that will either cause the cells to move towards each other or repel each other. It gets a little bit more complex in biological systems because you have various feedback structures in place, i.e. light sensors and temperature sensors and things like that, because the organic systems are far more complex than a simple equilateral triangle can represent as single fields overlapping. But in a general sense, you can say any environmental system where we have two or more bodies can be represented as I've shown there, and they are seeking equilibrium. Now, where we have a situation where there may be more energy external in that system than the two bodies themselves possess, those fields will grow and shrink accordingly in order to reach the state of equilibrium. If energy, for example, in the form of electromagnetic field or heat, is continually inputted into that region, obviously the atoms can only absorb so much before they begin to glow, or they reach a point of energy density where they seek to get rid of some of that energy. If it gets too hot, they will try and shed some of that energy one way or the other, either by moving to a cooler region or by releasing light, things like that. If you were to extend that analogy to, and this is where I start getting speculative, so bear with me, as we said, it's not a fully fleshed out idea, but if you were to say, as we've shown in QED, that electromagnetic fields are just a series of triangles of Planck quanta at a certain number, which gives us our frequency wavelength relationship for that region of space. If you consider the natural environment that we've now created for ourselves with Wi-Fi networks, cellular radios, radio antennas for FM radio and AM radios, TVs, plasmas, microwaves, we have literally saturated and increased the energy content of the environment where the two cells that we're describing here exist in. It's akin to putting them in a microwave and then turning the microwave on, as our technology has slowly saturating the environment that we're living in. Now, the old analogy goes that if you put a frog in a pot of water and slowly turn the temperature up, it'll never notice and eventually it'll die, as opposed to throwing it into a 100-degree pot of boiling water, it dies instantly. But this general acclimation of the system as it tries to distribute energies that it finds itself in, as the energies are increased slowly, it balances it all out. It seeks this point of equilibrium and spreads the energies out and finds itself in a situation where for example, the two cells here have more energy than they really need, and they want to get rid of some of it. Well, there's two ways. As I said, they can radiate that heat out as light or as heat itself, but we've got a closed system here for argument's sake, and it can't do that. So the next logical thing it can do is it can restructure those Planck quanta, the little triangles of energy that we've generalized, into a different form, another form that's stable, that where the energy no longer is part of the radiated field, no longer part of heat. And the simplest way you could describe that would be to convert it into a form of matter. And if you extend that analogy from the two cells to cells making more matter in order to get rid of heat, instantly you have this direct correlation to a cancer cell, where a normal cell that behaves quite has a distinct purpose and a distinct function that performs normally all its life, suddenly finds itself mutating and growing exponentially in a mutated form that serves no purpose in the body, and in fact is quite detrimental to the health of the entire body. And that's the definition of cancer. From my perspective and my musings, obviously I'm just basically saying that the cancers, the leukemias, the growths, all the excess cell growths, the melanomas, etc., that we find in our environment, or we suddenly find a spike of in the human species, is a direct result of us flooding our environment with electromagnetic waves of particular forms that cause these transmutations of mass energy into matter topologies. And that's what tetrionics is about. It's about defining and differentiating between mass, energy, and matter. And once you have that understanding, you can see how physical systems go about rearranging mass and energy into things like matter in order to store energy in a form that's different to radiated energies, or equally, it can radiate those energies out. But there's a pattern that underlies it all with this equilateral geometry that tetrionics is built on. And this is where one of your comments comes in. If you can model an atom down to the quantum level like we can in tetrionics, you know precisely how many Planck quanta it takes to build that particular particle. For example, in the case of an electron, there are exactly 1.2 by 10 to the 20 Planck quanta in 12 charged fascia that form the unique mass-matter topology of an electron. Now, any energy of motion is just in that triangular field, as we've shown there, but the electron is not a singular tetrahedra. It's, in fact, three tetrahedra joined together through electromagnetic coupling, but it's made up of electromagnetic mass energies in a matter topology. And because we can model them, we can use the information about that electron, i.e. 1.2 by 10 to the 20 Planck quanta, to calculate and to then test, or to actually create resonant frequencies for those particular mass-matter topologies. So, for example, if we knew the exact chemical structure of a particular tumor and its weight or its mass in the human body at any point, because of its unique structure and geometry, topology, mass energy content, we can calculate a resonant frequency for that tumor. And on a theoretical basis, as we said, this is all musing, but at some stage in the future, I see no reason why while I can create or calculate, the resonant frequency for any mass matter topology. Say, for example, we took a cancer cell, as I said, with a specific mass located in the body. We would then be able to create a resonant or a inverse field, like the engine speaker feedback device you were talking about, where we create the opposite polarity waves that would disrupt those cancer cells. It would target specifically the cancer cell because it's at the resonant frequency of the cancer cells. So we work out their chemical structure, their physical topology, and then we, instead of using a gamma ray as a blunt knife, we can tune that gamma ray to a specific frequency that would make that cancer cell literally start to shake itself apart as a resonant sort of effect. It's not a sound wave per se, but it has energy momenta. And just like the gamma ray knife, which slices, this would actually target a specific cancer or a specific molecule that would then cause that molecule to literally vaporize within the human body and release itself as heat or heat energies or light within the body of tackling cancer and curing it than the current means, but it's not the ultimate solution. The ultimate solution would be to rid the environment of these excess energies that are causing this change of the cells where they create this extra matter to store this energy. We should change our technologies away from harmful frequencies. We should look at what frequencies are causing what diseases and start using the information within tetrionics, i.e. the geometry of mass matter and the matter topologies, in a constructive way where we can really start ridding the environment that we're living in, stop turning the heat up in the water of the pot, so to speak, cleanse our environment and start treating cancers and other diseases from this basic understanding of mass energy and equilibrium. If we've got a situation, it may not be cancer, it may simply be a situation where we have a disease, a malady, where the body is not performing optimally, and we simply set about trying to determine what's out of balance with between the environment and the organism itself. Where is this imbalance occurring, and how can we put the balance back in? How can we restore the equilibrium that should exist so that the body can function at peak efficiency without being worn out in the process? It's no different than fine-tuning an automotive engine so that it consumes the right amount of fuel and doesn't use too much or get too hot, yet performs at peak efficiency for the fuel that's consumed. No different. We can generalize it, as I said, with the equilateral topologies, because tetrionics shows that those generalizations apply. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about a cell or a atom or a complete human body, the generalization always applies. So I've got no doubt if we spend the time and invest the effort into looking at cancer clusters, for example, we'll discover that there's a link between the cancer clusters and certain frequencies of radiation or certain energy densities in the environment around those clusters that are causing those clusters. So it's from a tetrionic perspective, we can model all the interactions that you're talking about with the feed forward and the feedback loops. They're just balances of energy. We can model all them, and we can move on from a generalization where medicine seems to most people to be a bit of trial and error. Take this drug, see what happens. This is the best drug to get these results. But however, in curing the cancer, we're also killing a lot of healthy cells along the way. We can stop that process, and we can start to finally target the mechanisms that are at work and the particular molecules, as I've discussed, so that we can more appropriately fine-tune this balance that's trying to take place, and we'll never balance it out properly because the universe has got so many energies floating around in different forms. It's impossible for us to completely control it, but we can obviously try and clean the environment up that we're living in so that it's more conducive to a healthy, long lifespan than what we find at the moment. And it's also not beyond the realms of conception that with what I know now about how the sun works and how the sun converts matter into energy to give life to everything on Earth at the distance from the sun, that we won't be able to in the near future be able to create mini versions of those processes on Earth, i.e. a tower that's constantly converting matter into energy and creating a field in an area, i.e. say a continent, where everything living in that field is attuned to that field. The field itself is nurturing and protecting the environment. We can develop devices that will extract the energy from that field, to power things, electrical devices, TVs, etc. But we can also use that field to set up that field in a way that it's conducive to living within it, i.e. that field actually nourishing these cancers that we now have, because we have a multitude of different frequencies that aren't tuned to the body's particular resonant frequencies. So we end up creating cancers. If we can create a field that is tuned optimally for the conditions of human life, it will naturally nourish the cells, bring us back into a state of equilibrium with the environment, afford us some protection from the external factors that have affected and stimulated or directed human evolution to date. And it will give us a more controlled environment in which to live. But I'll probably stop it there, but I've really gone out on a limb and extrapolated the basics of tetrionics so far as energy and mass matter. And point I'm trying to make is that with a closer understanding, what you talk of as systems in equilibrium and systems dividing, etc., are just forms of these triangles, and they're just trying to reach a state of comfortable equilibrium. And the more we fiddle with it without understanding our environment, the worse we're making it for ourselves. But now that we have these tools, let's see if we can put them to use and create an environment that's conducive to what we want, that extends our life spans, makes the world a better place in the process.
Yes, I really like how you're doing and what you're doing here, Calvin. Also, the appropriateness of the picture which you pulled out, 69.08, the mass-energy matter interaction. And I'd like to connect up on two points. First, I'd like to invite everybody to get away from this notion that cancer cells are a problem and that you need to kill them. This is the model which is presented by, the barbarian medicine which we have now, and that I call barbarian because it comes from the barbaros or the barbers, who were the surgeons on the battlefield, and in a way, we have a lot of the tradition of the battlefield in medicine. They are fighting diseases, and they think that you need to cut out whatever is wrong. But in the body, you can see that's quite different. In the body, you can see that we are dealing with living cells in communication, and the cells are part of organs, the organ groups are part of the body, and the body is part of the environment. So the communication takes place at a number of levels. Basically, there's four discrete system levels: that of the cells, that of the organs, that of the body, and that of the environment. And in cancer, for example, you can see that the emergence of cancer is always associated by the cancer cell not being able to tune its cell cycle to what goes on around it. And when you look into it, not from the anatomical, physical, and not from the pharmaceutical, chemical, but from the electromagnetic communicational level, then you can see that there will always be four principles involved why cancer cells emerge. One of them is that there is a shock in the connection between the body and the environment. It's traditionally called a life shock. And those are events in which people become disconnected from their life experience. They're traumatic, catastrophic events which they survived. At the next level, that then leads to an internal shock system by which the communication between the organs gets scattered or shattered in part, which means that the organ system, the electromagnetic system, can no longer effectively assure the communication between the organs to balance what happens around in the environment. at the third level, that then leads to a loss of the balance in the electromagnetic communication, which in medicine is described the level of the physiology or the free electron flow. Actually, they call it the acid-base balance. And the first Nobel Prize on cancer, given to Otto Warburg, was based also on his insight that cancer will only grow where the body is acidified, where there are too many free electrons. And at the fourth level, that means that the cells can no longer nurture themselves with the exchange with the other cells, let's call the internal food chain in the body. But that means that those cells are malnourished, they cannot communicate, they cannot synchronize, and in fact they are lost in wherever they are. There's nothing wrong with those cells functionally, they just don't know what they should do. They lost contact with the environment for the specific reason which you already referred to, is that there is a excess of radiation, specifically an excess of meaningless radiation around us. It is no longer part of the communication between living cells, as a result of which cells cannot work with it. It interferes with cells. So there's only one cause for cancer that I see, which is that the signal for cell synchronization got lost in a noise of the acidification of the body, the organ dysfunction, the psychological reality realization mismatch, plus the ambient electromagnetic fields. So that means that we need to look at it at a different level. This is where I'd like to connect it to a different perspective, going from cancer and how I see it works to pharmaceutical therapies to electroceutical treatment, which is basically the transition from big pharma to homeopathy. And evidently, immense money interests try to cloud this issue, try to befuddle the issue, because as long as people can sell drugs which can only be made under a patent monopoly, then the use of free treatments or medication which doesn't cost anything much will be considered to be competitive. Again, it's the war model prevailing in healthcare. When you look at pharmaceutical remedies, they're called drugs, they're molecules, and evidently they are part of how cells communicate. Doctors forget that cells produce molecules, which means that cells operate atomic forces. Cells are actually able to clip molecules, to edit them, and so in everything that cells do with molecules, they work with atomic forces, which is also why cells do not comply with the laws of physics, where they need energy to do something, which is something that you see in the false labeling of foods, where they say it has so much of sugar, so much of fat, so much of carbohydrates, and so on. Cells actually need information, and what matters for cells, living cells, is for example the oligo elements and the vitamin minerals, and those specific molecules by which they can communicate better. And yes, the carbohydrates and the fats and the sugars and so on, they are all helpful in that, because they provide the possibility to transform energies. But as I said, cells do not need energy. They can actually work with atomic energies. And then the way that works is precisely the difference between what you find in big pharma and homeopathy. The pharmaceutical approach is that you need to have molecules, the same as a steam engine model, that the cells need fuel. instead of the computer idea that cells need information and that molecules are carriers of information, which is actually what you find in the laboratory, where molecules are analyzed by their electromagnetic spectrum. And actually that is what homeopathy uses. It uses the electromagnetic spectrum of the molecules. It doesn't need the molecules anymore, because water can actually store the electromagnetic spectrum. Uh-huh. And when water evaporates on a sugar surface, it will actually trace the wave pattern in the water on the surface. So it actually turns the sugar into a kind of holographic floppy disk or compact CD as a carrier of the information. So at that level, you can then see that the cells, for having their interactivity well attuned, they need information, that the information can be contained in water. It can be contained as a wave pattern on the surface. In fact, it is any form of radio wave encapsulated or contained within matter. And then, of course, uh-huh. everything changes, because we no longer need to go by the steam engine model of having to feed cells, or the barbarian model of having to kill cells. All we need is the right information input by which the cells can regain